SACPA is a volunteer nonprofit organization, and it relies on contributions from the general public for us to operate. So if you feel like contributing extra money, it's okay. I'd like to thank Shaw TV, who broadcast our session on a weekly basis. I also like to thank Ericsson's for them preparing our lunch, and Lethbridge College, who does our audio now. Thank you very much to these people. We'll have a half-hour speaking session by Joe Anglin, followed by lunch, and then you can ask all the questions you want behind that. I'd like to introduce Joe Anglin now. He's from Rimby, Central Alberta. He's the CEO of Anglin Stewart Investment Group. It's a firm specializing in managing energy and currency traded funds. He has provided analysis on energy-related matters to CBC Radio and CNBC Television. He's an independent writer who advocates social justice. He writes a biweekly column for two central Alberta newspapers, the Red Deer Advocate and the Stedler Independent. Joe is currently guiding a landowners group, La Vesta Area Group, in central Alberta, challenging the tactics used by AltaLink and the Energy Utilities Board with respect to an application for regulatory approval for 500 kV transmission line from Edmonton to Calgary. He's not directly affected by this, but he, as I said, he's an advocate of social justice. With no further ado, I invite Joe to this podium. Can you give him a hand?
Thank you for having me. I drove into town last night. I gave this same presentation to a room full of between 600 and 800 people, and it was well received, and it was because it was so big, it went so long. I didn't get into town until 2 a.m., and I'm not a night person. I'm a morning person. So I was up anyways at 6 a.m., so I can't wait to get back to the hotel. But this is an important issue. Some of you may know a little bit about me. You can learn a lot about me in this issues of Canadian Business Magazine. And they did a feature article on everything that we've been through. And that's the easiest. Rather than me explain what went on, you can just go to that article. What I do like about that article is one thing. They went and fact-checked me. They fact-checked me from the author's point of view. Then the publisher called me up from Toronto, and the publisher had an expert fact-check me, and then they hired an independent person that they won't disclose to check my facts, and I proved correct on every fact, which really helps us out tremendously. But I'm here today to talk about Bill 46, because I am directly affected by the line. It just didn't come over my property. It wasn't taking my house. It was doing that to my neighbors. But they were going to make me pay for it. So as far as I'm concerned, that makes you directly affected also, because you were going to pay for it through your rates. And what we found out, we never actually fought a power line. What we fought for was our rights. Our right to be informed, our right to object, and our right to present evidence in our objections. Those are your three basic rights in dealing with utility matters. And the board would not let us exercise that right. So we argued with them, and they denied that when we brought that in a motion. Then we found that the board was in violation of the transmission regulations, Section 28 to be exact. The board looked at that and it said, you're right, we are, and we're not going to go by those regulations. Thank you very much. And we were trying to hold the board accountable to the law, just like we should be held accountable to the law. And I made a presentation to the board chairman. I said, if a police officer pulls me over for speeding in any town, can I just say, well, I know what the speed limit is, but I'm not going by that today? Because that's a regulation too. And they thought I was just being obstinate. But I wasn't. I was actually pointing out, you don't have that luxury of deciding what law you want to abide by and what law you don't want to abide by. It's as simple as that. And what we were told by AltaLink in dealing with this power line was, doesn't matter what you do, when Bill 46 comes through, we're going to build it anyways. And we had no idea what was in Bill 46. And just give me one second here. I seem to have lost my letter, but I had a letter from the EUB, and I can quote it. The EUB wrote the Department of Energy in January 2006, and they were extremely upset. It was written by a guy by the name of Bob Hege from the EUB. And it said, when you were preparing the paper to build, to create this bill, you did not consult with us. And being the regulator with the experience in the process, we find it very disturbing that we were let out of the consultation process. So that's how we know the origins of this bill. I actually have a copy of the letter. It's probably buried in my paperwork right here. I just show it to you afterwards. It's disturbing because the question then becomes, who did they consult? Because they didn't consult with the public. Now, I'm going to go through this slideshow rather quickly because this slideshow is intended. I normally speak for 30, 35 minutes, and I'm going to do this in 20 minutes. So I'm going to flash through the slides quite quickly. But basically, it is quite simple. The bill is complicated, and it is quite long. This, I only have one copy. I've given away all the copies I've been able to get. And basically, it starts right out saying they can make any order or decision without giving notice and without holding a hearing. Now, when you go to Section 9.2, this is where your rights are now listed. And these are the basic rights that I just mentioned to you earlier. The first one is if you're going to be directly and adversely affected, you have a right to get notice. And then you have a right to be informed. And if you want to object, you have a right to a hearing. Those are your three basic rights. Those are the rights that we said we were being denied. And the board, when we brought a full motion in front of them, denied our motion. And what the Department of Energy is saying is this bill guarantees affected parties the right to receive notice and the opportunity to learn all the facts. But when you look at Section 9.2, there's no word in there that says guarantee. It says if it appears that you may be directly affected, then you can have this right. But there's not a guarantee there. And that's what I point out to people. Because when you're dealing with the EUB, you are dealing with legislation. And you have to ask yourself, can I rely upon this legislation if they're coming to take my home or they're going to take my property against my will? What rights can I rely upon to defend myself if I want to defend myself? This is the bill. They then begin to water down your rights in this bill in Section 9.3. Now, the first part is common sense. We don't have a problem with this. In other words, as long as you're informed, if you don't object, there's no reason to hold a hearing. That makes sense. I don't think anyone would argue with that. But what they begin to do is begin to water down what they mean by directly and adversely affected. Now you have to be directly and adversely affected in a material way. Nobody knows what a material way means. It's not written anywhere. It's not in past legislation. And there's no definition of it in the new legislation. You're left to guess. So that's a gray area, but you have to meet that hurdle if you want to object to a project that's coming to take your land or to take your house. They then move on to, if the commission is satisfied that the applicant or the energy company is respecting the rules affecting each and every landowner. Nobody knows what the rules are. They're not listed anywhere. Again, that is one more gray area. So this is in Northwood Standing Section 2. So already your rights are being diminished. When I've been speaking around the province, I've been accused of cherry-picking certain sections of this bill and not showing the good stuff. I tell them, I'll let them go around the province and show the good stuff. I want you to learn what's really important to you when this is affecting your rights. And they say that I've been false or I've been wrong in saying that this in no way affects your right to retain legal counsel. But Section 9.4 has a different opinion to that. It says the commission is not required to give you an opportunity to make an oral presentation, even if you have a hearing, and it does not give you the right to counsel. As a matter of fact, it actually states just the opposite. The board is not obliged and does not have to afford you the opportunity to be represented by counsel. I don't know how you would interpret that, but I take it that they could actually, if you went to the board and your name was Joe Anglin, they would just say, put it in writing, get out of our hearing, by the way, you can't have legal counsel. How do I know that? They did it to us before this law even came into effect. They kicked us out of the hearing in Rimby. So if Section 9 throws in all these gray areas on materiality, on the rules respecting each and landowner, Section 24 clears it all up for you. And it says quite specifically, if the matter is urgent or for any sufficient reason, they can make an order of decision without giving notice. It's as clear as that. So if a nuclear power plant is going to be planned for Peace River, and all these power lines are going to have to come directly from Peace River straight down through here, they can make all those decisions without ever consulting you, without ever having notified you, and just say, we've already decided the matter's urgent, or we decided it was sufficient. And that makes it legal, and you cannot appeal that. Not under this legislation, maybe constitutionally, but you can't appeal it under here. The reason you can't, and this is a problem with the whole legislative scheme, is they've given the commission the powers of the Queen's Bench. I disagree with it. They have that now, because what they end up doing is actually giving it more powers than the Queen's Bench when you get through with the legislation. The people that sit on the board are political appointees. I only know of one lawyer on the board. He's retired. No one else has any legal training. They only have one agricultural expert, except they forget to tell everyone that's because he was arrested for growing marijuana in the 1960s. That's true. They brought him in, and then they retracted. He wasn't an agricultural expert. It's amazing what they try to bring, you know, tell you when you're asking these types of questions. Section 30 of the regulations is something that you want to give to tribunals in one sense, but the way they wrote it here is not only is every decision final, and you do want that from all tribunals, and you don't want the technical decisions appealable to every court because it's a technical decision, but you add this with the fact that the board has this power, and the board has the power of the Queen's Bench. Where it gets out of whack with our constitutional system is now they tell us in this regulation or in this legislation that regulations will now supersede legislation. So if there's a conflict with our duly elected officials making legislation and a non-elected board member goes in the back room and makes regulation, that regulation will now supersede the law. We don't believe this will stand up constitutionally, but that's what they're planning on doing to us. They also want the commission to be exempt from the Regulations Act. The Regulations Act basically lays out the rules on how regulations are created and how they're enforced, and all the particulars dealing with regulations, particularly Section 5. It states when a regulation goes into force, you have to have a reasonable opportunity to be notified. There's a process. This now is removed. So they can make regulations in the back room, and they can be enforceable on you even when you were not properly notified of it. So if you were in the middle of a hearing and they didn't like the rules that you were going by or trying to hold them to, they can go back quite quickly, change their own rules, supersede the law, and just come right back and say, we're enforcing this upon you. That's serious. In dealing with EUB matters and your property rights and your constitutional rights. The commission is not bound by the rules of evidence. This is very typical for tribunals. But you put this together with the fact that the commission is going to have the same power as the Queen's Bench. Now they have more power than the Queen's Bench. The Queen's Bench is subject to the rules of evidence. This is where this bill gets way out of line with our constitutional rights. During our hearing in Rimby, the board said not only were we, they denied us our motion when we said they denied us our rights, they denied our motion when we said you were not following the regulations. And then when we went in front of the board and we said, no, the board actually opened the hearing and said, we will not tolerate anyone questioning the need for this line. I read them the law under which the hearing was being held, which said they had to decide whether or not the line was needed. And what they did is they changed the rules on us, and they said, you can no longer make motions unless you give us 2 days' notice and put it in writing. That's what they did. And then they hired 4 private investigators. They infiltrated our group. They got in on our private phone conversations with our lawyers. And then they got access to our private emails, and they lied about it. They said they didn't do it. And then when we caught them, they said, okay, we hired the private investigators, but that was just for security. And then when we caught them spying, they said, okay, we were spying, but we didn't misuse the information. And then when the privacy commissioner did his investigation, he said, you misused that information. You violated the Privacy Act. Lo and behold, look what comes up in the bill. Dealing with security matters, they no longer have to abide by the Privacy Act. I don't know where this came from, except right from our group. I cannot imagine how someone sitting in the legislature said, hey, let's just throw this in the bill so the commission's not going to be held accountable to the Privacy Act. A lot of people have heard about the coming into force where they're going to make certain portions of this bill retroactive to June 1st, 2003. What they are doing is they're going to try to change history. On March 12th of this year, my first motion in front of the board, they were reading the law wrong, and that was my motion that they had to consider the need based on the public's interest. And what they did is that went all the way to the appeals court when we were going to win, and this came out in the legislation to appeal this matter. You're going to watch this and see how this goes through because they make this out to be a very small matter. They say that the reason they put this in the bill is because it's just going to eliminate an inconsistency in legislation. That's why they made it retroactive. The inconsistency in legislation is between Section 34 of the Electric Utilities Act and Section 14 of the Hydroelectric Energy Act. What's the difference? Section 34 deals with market participants. It deals with industry. And what it says is when you, the public, are going to pay for a pipeline or a transmission line, the ASO, the Alberta Electric System Operator, has to bring an application that is required by the industry. Remember the 3 red X's that I have up on here on the screen, because I'm going to come back to those. Section 14.3 says if you, the public, are going to pay for it, then it has to be required to meet your present and future convenience and need. In other words, you, the public, if you're going to pay for it, it's got to be for your benefit. So Section 34 is all about industry. It has to be required by industry. Section 14 says if you're going to pay for it, it's got to be something that you need. And they say that conflicts. So we asked everybody at the hearing, that I think they forgot they asked everybody, how does the bill work? Does this conflict? They had all the lawyers for all the industry write legal briefs. TransCanada said it's clear when you look at the process. EPCOR said the plan is coherent when you take Section 34, Section 14, and you connect that with Section 29. It all flows and it's coherent. TransAlta used the same word. I took this right out of their legal briefs. They said the legislative scheme is coherent. The City of Calgary agreed with TransAlta. They said it makes it clear when you look at Section 34 and Section 14 that Section 29 makes it coherent. AltaLink, the enemy in our hearing, says the legislative scheme is fully consistent. The Alberta Electric System Operator, the so-called independent nonprofit organization who gets, by the way, bonuses when the 500 kV line got approved. I think they're quite angry with me. They didn't get their bonuses. They say when they bring a clearly enunciated needs document that's required by industry, and when you combine that with the existing legislative scheme, it's clear and concise for the two-stage process. Nobody from industry said it conflicted. We didn't say it conflicted. Why are the MLAs, why does our government say they're changing this because it conflicts? There's no evidence anywhere from anyone that said it did. And they're making it retroactive. The EUB says it sets out the process, it makes it clear, and it provides a link. In other words, the legislative scheme follows through quite nicely. And it's quite simple. Section 14 says when the board considers, it shall consider that the application, whatever the project is required to meet your convenience and your need. Why? Because you're asked to pay for it. It's going to be in your electric rates or your gas rates, depending on the project. They're replacing that with Section 17 in Bill 46. Notice the difference. One says the board shall, and it has to be required for the public convenience and need. The legislation they're replacing it with says it shall, in addition to other matters, got that fancy little word called may, give consideration. And they got the audacity to say that this advances your rights. Not only that, you remember those three X's? Look what they replaced them with. That's why I marked them in the first time I showed you this section of the bill. No longer is an application required by industry. It may be. May be required. It may not be required. The problem with the legislation, it now comes down to this. When a major project comes through, like a transmission line, a gas pipeline, a hydro plant, a nuclear power plant, is it required by anybody? And the answer is, under this legislation, maybe. But there's no stipulation that it has to be. And I'll make a prediction right here. Any nuclear power plants built up in Peace River will not be paid for by private industry. I will guarantee you that. It's too expensive. You will pay for it. You will pay for it through your own electric rates so they can export power. That's an amazing statement, but the fact is that's the way this is lining up to be. So a bunch of people got together and they wanted to go see Mel Knight. And they asked me if I would come because I've been doing this everywhere and in almost every town. And I said I'd be happy to, but please let Mel Knight know I'm coming. Within 7 minutes of getting my name on the list, this email came back and it said, take Joe Anglin off the list. I saw Mel Knight about a year ago on a different matter altogether. He refuses to see me, and they don't want to hear from me. But we're asking people, we got to start this bill all over again. You need to call your MLA. You need to call Ed Stelmach's office. Then you need to write him, and then you need to fax him, and you need to put your foot down. Make it short and sweet. Tell him you're going to make it an election issue. You take away my rights, I'm going to fight this with my vote. That's what you got to do. You got to get your neighbors to do it and your family members to do it. You put your foot down, and it's time people stood up and really understood what democracy is. It's not something you have. It's something you do. And you have to do it. You have to contact these people, and you have to tell them, I want in this bill my rights furthered, not reduced. So now, rather than adversely and directly affected, it should be and or. It should be absolute as far as intervention is a right. Say it. Don't tell me in words because they mean nothing. Put it in the legislation. Intervention is my right when I'm affected. And the same goes for groups. If you can prove you have a substantial interest in a project, you should have a right to intervene. Public interest, there's absolutely no debate here. If you as the public are going to be asked to pay for a project, it should be for your benefit. You should be able to see the benefit from this in one fashion or another. This business of you paying for a project for industry to profit, where you would derive no benefit, makes no sense. My favorite one is, I just reversed this on them. We got a lot of people in my area who cannot put things in writing. And what I'm saying is, when you have a right of intervention, it's your choice. You should have a right to make an oral representation, because most of the people in my area can say it from the heart, but they can't put it down on paper. And without question, they should say it. You have a right to be represented by counsel. Don't tell me you're going to promise me that. Put it in writing. Put it in the legislation. Let me count on it. The other one, I don't mind them making decisions without giving notice or holding a hearing if it's an emergency and it's urgent. But then if they have to do something like that, it should not be subject to Section 30. In other words, the decision should not be final. It should be subject to review. They should have to prove that it was urgent and it was in the public interest. So we're asking everybody is pull this bill completely. It started off with the wrong foundation. They didn't even consult with the regulator we have now. It is divorce legislation that really takes our 1995 legislation that created two boards, took two boards and made it into one. Now we're taking one board and divorcing it back into two. I don't see where the efficiency lies in this bill except through the diminishment of your rights. That's the only efficiency I see for the industry. And I spoke to industry and I told the industry, don't count on it. Don't count on it, because you remove our rights, we're not rolling over. You think you're going to come back down with another project? We'll see you in the appeals court. And by the way, we'll see you in the Supreme Court of Canada, because we're not giving up. And they all got wide-eyed, and I said, do you want to go through what we went through in the last 2 years? Industry spent $2 million. We spent 2 years of our life, and we're back to square one. And I told the Chamber of Commerce in Calgary, I said, we will fight you for our rights till hell freezes over. And with global warming, we got a lot of time coming. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your lunch, and we'll get back to Joe in half an hour.